And we're thrilled to have you all at this second annual, and let's make it annual, White House Summit on Next Generation High Schools. I'm pleased to kick things off by welcoming to the stage my boss, Roberto Rodriguez, Deputy Assistant to the President for Education.
Thank you, Catherine. Good morning, everyone. It's my distinct pleasure to welcome you here to the White House and to the second White House Summit on Next Generation High Schools. It's wonderful to see you all this morning. I hope everybody got a big cup of coffee and is ready to get to work today. You know, among the many domestic issues before the president today, education remains at the top of his priority list. We know that education continues to be the surest rung on the ladder of opportunity up into the middle class. And over the past 7.5 years, our administration has made remarkable progress in really driving greater educational opportunity and improved outcomes across the educational pipeline. From the president's vision to deliver high quality preschool for each and every one of our youngest learners, to the work to open the doors of higher education for millions more across the country, in service of his goal to lead the world with the highest proportion of college graduates by the end of this decade. We've launched efforts to drive research and development and scale innovation through investing in Innovation Fund. We've launched new efforts to bring high-speed broadband to each and every community and classroom across our country. And we've more than doubled the amount of funding in the Pell Grant to really provide college opportunity for millions more. Today also marks the final year of our administration's education bus tour, which I'm sure you'll hear from shortly from our Secretary of Education, John King, to highlight these and other investments. And now we're gathered here again to focus on the imperative of next generation high schools. Last November, we gathered here with our philanthropic, nonprofit, and other partners to celebrate the need for a different and more focused approach to supporting the learning of America's high school students. It was a great day. It galvanized over $375 million in commitments to next generation high schools across the country. And today we celebrate again that, that commitment and also the renewed focus that we know we need on teaching and learning for our young people, and in really reshaping and supporting a deeper experience around learning in our young people's lives. We know that we need a new set of experiences to make sure that our students have the knowledge, the skills, and the preparation that they'll need to be successful in today's economy and in their communities. We know that we need greater opportunities to link their learning to college and career more actively in more tangible ways, a deeper understanding of the competencies and the skills and the knowledge that will drive them to be strong communicators and collaborators and problem solvers and innovators in today's economy. We know we need a greater focus on personalized learning to support our students' interests, to meet them where they are in their learning and development and help them get ahead. We know we need a renewed focus on the social and emotional foundations alongside the cognitive foundation for learning for our students, and we're learning more and more about the brain science there each and every day, and that's helping to shape new solutions and strategies to help our students succeed. And we know we need to do more to really challenge and redesign the notion of moves away from the traditional notion of seat time to support mastery and focus instead on the knowledge that we know our students need to help move them ahead. So ultimately, this requires a new national approach and a new national movement to embrace designs and opportunities that will connect our classrooms and learning for our students to the real world, will bridge that learning to hands-on training for college and career. So I'm happy to welcome a number of you back that were with us in November last year. Since that time, we have a new national law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, that has galvanized a new goal of college and career readiness for all students. That's an opportunity that's at the backdrop of today's discussion. We want to welcome a number of new leaders and partners here with us today. You've each asked to be here today because you're leaders in this work. in your respective communities and in your field. We've tried to structure today to share lessons, to share learnings around next generation learning and next generation high schools. And ultimately, our goal here is, and this work is about democratizing the solutions and strategies that we'll discuss today, so that those are available not just to some or a few students, but really available to all students. Before we begin, I'd like to extend a thank you, in particular, a special thanks to a number of individuals who were instrumental in hosting today's event and in organizing today's event. In particular, our tremendous hosts, Mario Cardona and Catherine Galogli on my team. Secretary King, thank you, and Undersecretary Mitchell and the entire team at the Department of Education for their continued leadership on this work. My colleagues, Tom Khalil, Megan Smith, Kumar Garg, and others in the Office of Science and Technology Policy here at the White House have been tremendous colleagues and partners in this work. Joan Farini-Mundi, who you'll hear from shortly at NSF, and her team for continuing to drive this work forward. Without further ado, we'll go ahead and get started, and it is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome our outstanding Secretary of Education, John King, to the podium.
Morning, everybody. It is good to be here with all of you. Thank you, Roberto, for the warm introduction. Thank you to our White House colleagues for hosting us today and for your continuing partnership in this work. I want to especially recognize Tony Evers, who chairs the Council of Chief State School Officers, and Chris Minnick from CCSSO. I want to thank them for being here, because we need a leadership environment that supports innovation, and they are both committed to that innovation in service of equity. And so I want to especially appreciate their leadership and their presence. Thank you all for being here, our local and state leaders, our school leaders and teachers, our parents and students who are in the room. This is an important moment to celebrate progress that we have made over the last 8 years, and also to think together about the work ahead. As Roberto mentioned, today also kicks off our bus tour, 6 states, 11 cities and towns over the next 5 days. So after this, I head back over to the department to kick off the tour and then board a big yellow bus that's going to take us through those states across the South. And throughout that trip, what we're going to try to highlight, again, are the achievements and the work ahead. We're going to celebrate the fact that we have the highest graduation rate we've ever had as a country at 82% because of work that folks in this room and educators and families across the country are doing. We're going to celebrate the fact that we have 1 million more African American and Latino students in college today than when the president began. That's right. We're going to celebrate the fact that we have millions more students who go to schools that now have access to high-speed internet. We're going to celebrate the fact that there are thousands upon thousands more students getting access to high-quality early learning because of investments that this administration has made. And as we do that, we are going to celebrate the progress we've made towards the president's commitment in 2013 to rethink high school, and the work that all of you have been doing to create next generation high schools that not only prepare students to get a high school diploma, but truly prepare them for success in college, careers, and life. Many of you are critical to our national effort to ensure we have the workforce we need in the STEM fields. But too often, I think we boil down our work in education innovation to being STEM work. Yes, it is STEM work, but ultimately, preparing all students for success is about more than English and math. It is about more than STEM. It is about helping every student find their passion, the thing that engages them, the thing that excites them about learning. It is about helping every student build strong relationships and connections with adults in their school and in their community. And it is about giving students the opportunity to have a vision for their own personal future. And that's about English and math, it's about science, it's about computer science, but it's also about the arts. It's also about career and technical education. It is also about social studies. I think of my experience teaching high school. When I was a high school teacher, one of the things that we did was a city project, we called it, a research project that required students to apply what they were learning in social studies to meaningful civic action in the community. Students were engaged in research, but they were also engaged in service projects. You can think of students who worked with the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative in Boston, which has been working for years to try to get rid of transfer stations where folks were literally dumping trash in low-income communities and leaving it there, ruining the quality of the air and of the soil throughout the community. DS&I has worked to change that and to build affordable housing, and watching high school kids get engaged in that work and not only get a deeper sense of the need for social justice work, but get a sense of their own ability to impact the future of their community, that was powerful. That's what this work is about. It is about how we engage young people in a vision for their future. And that's what's happening across schools in this room. And as Roberto mentioned, I think we now enter a period where we can have the potential for a state and district environment that is even more conducive to innovation. The Every Student Succeeds Act that the president signed right here in December gives us a new set of tools. It gives states the opportunity to broaden the definition of educational excellence. It gives states the opportunity to rethink some of the prescriptive, ineffective, one-size-fits-all solutions of No Child Left Behind and replace them with efforts to innovate on behalf of equity, just as people in this room are doing. It gives us the chance to build on evidence about what works. The importance of having teachers who are well prepared and well supported. The importance of ensuring that all students have access to rigorous coursework that prepares them for college and careers. The importance of environments that support high expectations and ensure that students just don't get to post-secondary education, but through post-secondary education with the skills they need for success. There are many great examples in this room, and I hope there is an opportunity over this time together to learn from each other, to learn from the example of the Highline Public Schools in Washington State and the work that they've done to raise graduation rates through the strategic investment of Race to the Top dollars. An opportunity to learn from Change the Equation and the work that they are doing in Oakland to match young people with STEM mentors and to ensure that STEM leaders are committing resources to ensure the long-term diversity and success of the STEM workforce. At Change the Equation, they've already put in over 57,000 hours of volunteer time from folks in the STEM fields and look forward in the next year to reaching 112,000 hours of mentoring. That's the kind of work I hope folks will share. I hope folks from Chesterfield County Public Schools will talk about their commitment to ensure equity in STEM access, to focus on achievement gaps for low-income students and students of color. And I hope as the conversation evolves today, you will ask tough questions about how we ensure that the innovation we're engaged in reaches the students who are most at risk and most in need. Despite our progress, we know we face substantial achievement gaps for our students of color, our low-income students, our English learners. We know that in too many school communities, students who are homeless or in foster care are invisible. We know that in too many places, students leave high school thinking they have a high school diploma that will be a ticket to college and career success, only to find that they get to college and are told to go down the hall to the remedial class, which is a euphemism for high school. In too many places, we know that our students of color don't have access to rigorous advanced coursework. Our civil rights data collection data show that in too many places, students who attend schools that serve large numbers of African American and Latino students aren't just less likely to have AP classes and international baccalaureate classes, they're less likely to have access to calculus and physics and algebra too. And so I hope today's conversation will be grounded in the work that we need to do to ensure equitable opportunities. I hope today's conversation will confront the painful truth that there are 1.6 million students in this country who go to school every day in a school that has a sworn law enforcement officer and no school counselor. I hope today's conversation will grapple with the reality that over the last few decades, we've actually seen our country backtrack on the goal of diverse schools. We see places around the country that are more segregated by race and class today than they were 10 or 20 years ago. When we think about innovative high schools that create unique opportunities for students academically, we also need to create opportunities for students to learn across divisions of race and class. I hope that will inform today's discussion. I hope today's discussion will grapple with the reality that although today a majority of the students in our public schools are students of color, only 18% of our teachers are teachers of color. Only 2% of our teachers are African American men. I hope the conversation will ask, how can innovative schools help to build a more diverse pipeline of teachers that is prepared to support students' academic success? So I'm excited about this summit and the opportunity to both rethink what students' experience is like in the classroom, but also to challenge ourselves to ensure that schools are truly the engines of equity and opportunity that we intend. Innovative high schools have the opportunity not only to strengthen the long-term success of our economy, but to strengthen the long-term success of our democracy by being places that equip students with the skills they need, but also the opportunities to build the relationships that are the foundation of a strong civic culture. We want to support that work. There are a series of policy briefs that we've developed based on learning from folks in the room that we will make available so that others can learn from your example. There is research evidence that you'll hear about, and Joan and others will talk about that, that we want to make sure that we lift up about what works in high schools. And as we move forward with the implementation of the Every Student Succeeds Act, we are ever vigilant to the notion that we need more places that are expanding opportunity for kids in the way that many of you are. So I'm grateful for your being here for this summit, but more than that, I'm grateful for the work that you do on behalf of young people in our communities every day. Please continue your efforts. Please redouble your efforts. Please learn from each other. Please expand this room. We ought to have a room twice as large, three times as large, five times as large over the next few months as we keep bringing people together to say, how can we do better on behalf of our kids and communities? Thank you for your leadership. Thanks for the opportunity to be with you today.
As Roberto mentioned earlier, the National Science Foundation has been such a critical partner to us in this next generation high school work. And as evidence of that commitment, last week they had a convening on next generation high schools with a strong focus on STEM. And they gathered together researchers and educators to talk about the different breakout topics that you all will be discussing today. And so it's my pleasure to introduce Joan Freeman-Mundy, Assistant Director of Education and Human Resources from the National Science Foundation, to share some of the learnings from that convening.
Good morning, everyone. It's terrific to be a part of this exciting event, this second White House Summit on Next Generation High Schools. And I'd like to offer my thanks as well to the White House, to Roberto, to Secretary King, OSDP staff, and most of all to you in the audience who are convening here to continue to advance what is a most critical conversation for our nation. As you may know, each year, the National Science Foundation invests approximately $1.3 billion in education efforts. And indeed, many of these are focused on STEM, but I'm struck by Secretary King's remarks that we also need to think about how the NSF investment reaches beyond simply preparing the next STEM workforce. It reaches beyond that in many ways, in part because it offers new ways of better understanding equity and opportunity for all students and for enabling people to have choices for career options and for fulfillment in daily life and society. Among the $1.3 billion in education are many investments that are related to new visions for STEM education in the K through 16 arena. But I'd like to note that as a basic science research agency whose main mission is about promoting the progress of science, we also are constantly focused on the future of science, which I think is a consideration to keep in view as we think about next generation high schools. The NSF has just released a set of 10 new big ideas for science that I think offer great promise for helping us as we also think about the future of high school. I'll mention just a couple of these. One of these is about data science, and this is an area where we would expect to be investing seriously going forward. Harnessing data for the 21st century of science and engineering, the idea being to generate a worldwide data-enabled future for the United States through fundamental research and education in data science. So one can imagine the implications this may have for secondary education, both for STEM and for improving learning more generally. A second area that I'd like to mention is work at the human technology frontier, shaping the future. The idea here is that we would be developing and investing in the development of smart technologies and environments to enhance the human experience, and assess the impact of those environments on human behavior and social systems. So again, education can be a central beneficiary as we think about these kinds of broad-ranging investments in science. The other thing that we need to think about, of course, is how the people who will work in that science, who will work in data-rich science fields, who will work in technology-intensive science, how their education will progress, what pathways will be made available to them, and how can that start at the pre-college level. In August 2016, President Obama named 213 K-12 mathematics and science teachers as recipients of the prestigious Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. As part of the celebrations for those awardees last week, NSF held a forum last Thursday focused on principles of active learning and focused on conversation with these teachers from around the country about better ways that government can support their engagement in promoting active learning. On Friday, we held a forum focused on next generation STEM schools. Similar conversations where we listened to our practitioner colleagues, paired them with researchers, talked about how we can together advance and scale what's known and improvements, what's known about improvements for STEM education at the high school level. I'd like to just mention a few areas that were central in those discussions and give very quick summaries, thumbnails of what happened. There are many folks in the audience who were participants in those events last week, and they will be here through the day to elaborate. First was our focus on active learning. While this is not a new way of thinking about learning or about designing instruction, it is an area whose potential to engage diverse learners and to promote equity is very strong. And so we're interested at the National Science Foundation not only in understanding different ways that active learning can be best implemented, but also in promoting it through our investments in research. This is an evidence-based way to increase STEM interest, performance, and retention. So at the meeting last week, Bill Penwell of University of Colorado Boulder focused on a number of evidence-based recommendations, and these were discussed in our breakouts last week. First of all, the importance of anchoring learning in meaningful problems, the notion of using student questions to drive instruction, the notion of having students assist with teaching, and then most importantly, I think, expanding accessible, visible pathways into STEM at the level of the community. A second area that I'll just highlight had to do with personalized learning. Again, a goal that has been in education for some time. We're really beginning to see from research in education the power of digital learning environments to provide targeted diagnostic feedback to students to identify their interests and to help motivate them to explore their interests more fully. NSF has invested in a variety of work, and we can provide summaries of this to you as that goes forward. Third area that had some attention last week, maker spaces and fab labs, fabrication labs. We've been pleased to be investing with our partners across government in these areas to understand their potential, these out-of-school learning opportunities, to understand their potential for teaching us about how to engage students, support rigorous STEM learning, and prepare students for a variety of pathways. The focus on rigorous coursework continues. How do we create opportunity to learn that is equitable across the schools of our nation? And one very interesting focus on that through our meetings last week had to do with the notion of inclusive STEM high schools, the work of Sharon Lynch and Barbara Means and others, where the findings are beginning to show great promise for the improvement of STEM schools in general. The notion that immersing students in STEM over 4 years truly can lead to success and more career opportunity and more choices, and the notion that students' goals and self-perceptions and identities can shift because of that kind of immersion are very promising sorts of findings. We're investing in work on socio-emotional learning, on the measurement of that kind of learning and its relationship to STEM progress in general. And then the last thing I would like to mention is our longstanding NSF focus on the topic of broadening participation. At the active learning session, Dr. Joe Handelsman of OSTP noted that 70% of our students are not white and male. They are ethnic minorities, racial minorities, or women. We need to be reaching the students who are most left out of STEM classrooms, that other 70% inside and outside of the classrooms, and she advocated for active learning as one approach. NSF has taken a systemic approach to this notion of broadening participation with a new initiative called NSF Includes, and later this morning at 11, I'm told, our press release will go announcing the first 37 awardees in our Includes program, which is focused on improving the preparation, participation, advancement, and potential contributions of those who've been traditionally underserved in STEM. A number of these efforts that will be announced today are focused on pathways, on the K through 12 experience, on its relationship to preparation for undergraduate education and for career, and we're very excited about partnering with our colleagues across government in continuing to advance the cause of equity and democracy in STEM education. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and thank you to the National Science Foundation for their tremendous partnership in this work. Up next, I'm pleased to welcome Chris Minnick, Executive Director of the Council of Chief State School Officers, to the stage. States have been a really important partner in this work, and CCSSO has been a leader in organizing them and making sure that we're excited and aligned about this work together. So thank you, Chris, and welcome to the stage.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. About 6 years ago, was talking with my wife, and we saw online that our local high school had the opportunity to mentor students, and we didn't know what we were signing up for, but we decided to go down there and do this. We were paired with a kid, Javier, who nobody in his family had ever been to college, and he sort of was trying to figure out why we were there and what we were doing. And so we began this conversation about whether or not he wanted to go to college. And he wanted to go to college, but his parents really wanted him to go and get a job right after high school. And I will save you the six-year story about this, but the biggest thing was this high school that he's in Virginia prepared him academically for college. But when he ended up, and we convinced his parents that it was a good idea to go to college, when he ended up in college, he didn't make it for the first 2 years. Made it through about 6 months, and he didn't have the skills to deal with failure. He didn't have the skills to deal with the deep type of academics that that he was going to need to get through college. So I think while the while his grades were fine, his SAT scores were good enough to get into that school that he went to, he wasn't prepared for what he was going to experience. I'm excited to tell you now, 6 years after we met him, he just graduated from James Madison this past year, which is really exciting for us, other than his parents have now moved back to El Salvador, so he's living with us. So I only have a 4 and a 1-year-old, so parenting a 22-year-old is definitely a big different experience for me. But I didn't know what I was signing up for. But as an aside, if you have an opportunity to get involved in your community, in your schools, with even one kid, it really gives you a good perspective on the work we're trying to do with Next Generation High Schools. At the Council of Chief State School Officers, we're really honored to be partnering at the White House. Thank you, Roberto, and Secretary King, for the opportunity to do this work. I see many of our members here in the audience today, and we're excited about the work we're doing to advance this conversation. We also have our Innovation Lab Network, which is a group of 10 states that is working together, and it's led by Jenny Poon, who is, where's Jenny? She was just standing over here. Oh, there, she's in the back. So Jenny's leading that work for us at CCSSO, and if you have any questions about what we're doing with these states in terms of state policy that can further the conversation of Next Generation High Schools, please have a conversation with her during this summit today. So my main responsibility today is to introduce our president of our organization, Tony Evers. And I could tell you that he's a teacher and a principal and a superintendent, and he is all those things. But more importantly, for the past year, he's been focused, as the president of our organization, of leading an agenda of equity for the country. And it was really unique when he came in last November for him to say to us, you know what I really want to do is put equity front and center for the country and for our membership. And it hasn't been an easy conversation. We've had to deal with conversations about race, about poverty, things that our organization has not had to deal with in the past, even though we should have dealt with them. So for Tony to have the courage to put that front and center for our membership, and we are moving forward now with an agenda to close gaps across the country, I think is really admirable. So please welcome to the stage Superintendent Tony Evers.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Good morning, everybody. And Chris, I've got a handful of grandkids that you got some room for them. Anyway, thanks for the kind introduction and your good work as CCSSO president. It's a real honor for me to be here today, and especially around the important discussion, but most importantly for me and my chief of staff, Emily Amundson, who is here, is having our friends and colleagues from Milwaukee Public Schools here. Darren Driver, superintendent from MPS, and her great colleagues are doing wonderful work in Milwaukee, and it's great to have them here. And Darian is someone that is absolutely committed to equity and excellence in the Milwaukee Public Schools, which is clearly the largest and most diverse school district in the state of Wisconsin. So it's been a while since I've been in high school. I was just trying to figure that out. It's probably 50-some years, I'd say. And you do forget, but I'm really pleased in our state of Wisconsin. You go travel across the state, as I do as state superintendent, you see fab labs in school districts that have maybe 300 kids, K through 12, and you have Milwaukee Public Schools, high school, taking on agriculture and urban agriculture. And of course, everything in between, we've got personalized learning, we've got dual enrollment options, community schools, and so on. So we feel proud of what we're doing. And I can tell you that Wisconsin has a history of having festivals and farmers markets. And every time I go to one of these events, people come up to me, strangers, either want to harass me about something, but most of the time they're talking about great things that are going on in their local high schools. And it's clear that the love of learning around those comments and around what's going on in our schools is really contagious. So there's a commonality among all these great schools and great programs. And you know this, and I know there are some actual teachers in the audience, but the excellent educator connecting in meaningful ways, and we've talked about all the speakers all before me, in meaningful ways with students is building relationships, no matter what the type of innovative practice you're proceeding with. And it's the secret sauce in making sure the kids learn at a high level. So I want to share a couple stories with you this morning, and the first one is one that strikes with me as at my core, and Darian's heard it before, so I apologize, but the best part of my job is getting into classrooms and getting out of the political realm, and this one story I have, it really gets at me is because it really epitomizes what a love for learning actually looks like. And I see this all the time, but this one stands out. This spring, I was on a visit to Milwaukee, and it was a school that focused on fine arts, and that's not necessarily my wheelhouse. And it's a different type of school where students have the opportunity to infuse the arts into all their academic learning. And so I don't get into many schools that focus on fine arts or even regular art classrooms. So what I do, I spend a lot of time interacting with kids so I can understand what's going on in that classroom. And in this particular trip, I spotted a young lady with really, really red hair. And when I say red, I mean it was red enough that I wanted to walk over and talk to her about what she was doing. Her name was Leslie. She came to the United States at the age of 5. She is an immigrant, I will say. And she navigated me through her portfolio and explained how her art kind of followed the journey of her life, the good times and the bad times. And she talked about the role her teachers played in her success. And she explained how over time the art, the way she looked at art grew. And needless to say, I was really impressed. And then she shared with me that she, as a senior, had secured over $90,000 in scholarships to attend a 4-year university in the state of Wisconsin, in the city of Milwaukee. And she was so confident in her description of what she had learned that I felt I could push her a little bit. And I hope she wasn't offended when I asked her this question. I hope I didn't ask it this way. But I asked, what in the world are you going to do with an art degree, Leslie? And she smiled and she told me she's not going to become an artist. She's going to become a biologist. And she, what she learned, she told me this, what she learned as an artist, as a skilled artist, was things like perseverance, illustration, precision, determination, grit, all those things that we don't want to recognize, but those things translate perfectly to the study of biology. And frankly, Leslie had been prepared in that school to persevere in any field with those particular skills. So while we talk about innovation, I believe one of the constants in this equation is the determination of all our educators to make sure that they support kids like Leslie. So across the state of Wisconsin, I find that there's 60,000 people that are in our public school classrooms that give their hearts and souls to kids, work on those relationships every day, in and out. So I believe we can and should be able to provide the same high school experience as Leslie has received for all kids in the United States. But we have to commit ourselves to an honest conversation around equity, of opportunity, access to those relationships that Leslie got. And I'll give you an example of where I go crossways with this particular issue. It's people went crossways with me. We have a number of districts in the state that do real well in the area of personalized learning, all across the state, and they work hard, especially in southeast Wisconsin, more of our urban area. And in this past year, we gathered with a group of people from across the country to talk about personalized learning. And one of the discussions that sprung up around the group was around equity and why more students of color or disadvantaged students were not involved in personalized learning. And the discussion lingered a long time around the issue of the question, is personalized learning for every single kid? And I have to tell you that in this particular conversation, not everybody said yes. This is extraordinary. I thought about this all the way home and many times since. I know each person in that discussion cared about kids, cared about all kids, but that story sticks with me as an example of the deep thinking that Secretary of Education just talked about and others have talked about, that we have to look at the nexus of innovation and equity, and they can't be separate conversations. And if we don't take a look at this nexus, achievement gaps won't shrink, they're going to be bigger. And I can tell you as a moral conundrum, we have to do that work now, and today's opportunities to do that work is really important. So I'm confident with our collaboration and time together, we can find ways to ignite that contagious thinking around innovation and equity that will lead to all kids achieving at higher levels. I want to say we have great partners with CCSSO. I know they're committed to equity, not only because of my work around that as president, but the work of all the Chief Chase school officers. And I also kudos to CCSSO for the Innovation Lab Network that we have been part of for many, many years, and the work that Jenny and others have done to make sure that equity is part of that conversation. So thanks very much for your conversation that you're going to have today. I had an opportunity to meet with a good group of our philanthropists last evening, and I was so pleased with the work that they're doing, thinking through this issue of innovation, making sure that innovation is for all kids in the United States. So thank you very much, and enjoy the conference.
Thanks so much. And so in addition to the great work and leadership that Dr. Evers has been doing, I just want to take a moment to say thank you to the other state leaders who took the time out of their busy schedules to be here, folks from Pennsylvania and from Ohio, from New Hampshire, in addition to Wisconsin, and also Rhode Island. And just thank you so much for taking the time out of your day in the thick of back to school, which I know is very, very difficult. And in addition to that, the more than 25 district school leaders who are here and their teams, thank you so much for being with us. So we have the great benefit of being able to hear from a lot of you today. And so the next part of our program will be just to hear a little bit about how important this work is at a district level and for students. And so it's my pleasure to call up Susan Enfield to talk a little bit about some of the work that she's leading in Highline and to share some of the learnings there and the work that they're leading. Thank you so much.
Good morning. It's an honor to be here, especially since there are so many familiar faces and people I admire in this room. I'm joined today by one of our talented, dedicated teacher leaders at our high school, our Academy for Citizenship and Empowerment, James Booten. And we work for the richly diverse student population in Highline Public Schools located just south of Seattle. And I am starting my fifth year in Highline. And as I was thinking about today and thinking about the work that we're doing at high school, and I am a former high school teacher, I thought about my interview day. When I was a finalist for this job. And one of the parts of that interview, it's really, when you're a superintendent finalist, it's really just a gauntlet. I think it's a stamina test more than anything else. So of the many, many people and things I did that day, one was to visit a group of high school students at one of our schools. And I asked these young men, what is it that the next superintendent needs to know? And hands shot up. And the first one said, they need to know that just because we don't have a lot doesn't mean we don't want to know how to be successful. Another hand shoots up. We want more advanced placement classes. Another hand shoots up. If you keep raising pay for play, I have friends who are going to drop out because sports is what keeps them coming to school. I went home and I told my husband, this is it. This is where I want to be. And I haven't looked back since. And each day it is a privilege for me to serve the students and families of Highline. I will say, though, that when I entered the district 4.5 years ago or so, it became really clear that we had not set a very high bar for our kids. And in fact, my initial kickoff with teachers, principals, I don't know if this was a stupid move or a gutsy move on my part, I actually said in my talking with people in the community and others, it's clear that there's a massive pity party happening for our kids and we need to shut it down because pity does our kids no service. We need to raise the bar, have a high standard of excellence, and then do everything we can as the adults in the system and the community to help our kids get there. So we were able to embark on a strategic planning process that engaged not just staff, students, teachers, people in the community. And rather than really sort of land on a vision or a mission statement, which I find too often turn into mere platitudes, we developed a promise. And that promise guides everything that we do in Highline. And the promise is that every student is known by name, strength, and need, and graduates prepared for college, career, and citizenship. And that strength piece is important because we refuse to approach the work we do with our students in Highline from a deficit perspective, because that's how too many people approach them. As I said, we're a richly diverse school system. Over 100 languages are spoken, and our students come to us with myriad challenges that certainly can be barriers to their learning, but that we don't allow to be an excuse for them not learning. So we developed a strategic plan with very, very bold goals, goals that I say are worthy of our kids. So for example, we've set a minimum 95% graduation rate. We've set a minimum 95% algebra passage rate by grade 9. We've committed to eliminating out-of-school suspensions and expulsions except when critical for staff and student safety. It's a bold plan. We're in our fourth year right now. And it really, though, has helped galvanize a lot of the work that we did. Concurrent with that strategic plan, we were also the beneficiaries of a regional Race to the Top grant, which really allowed us to propel our work significantly. One example, we now can provide the SAT for all students during the school day, and it's paid for. So that was a gatekeeper that was preventing too many of our kids from graduating prepared to go on to the college career of their choice. And we've also at the same time made a significant investment in early learning. And I don't think we do a good enough job in districts of making the connection between investing in early learning to graduation. They're directly connected. If we do not give our kids a strong start, they're not going to get across that stage with a diploma that's a ticket to the future of their choice. So when I arrived, we only had half of our kids in full day K. We now provide tuition-free full-day K for every child who wants it, and we've invested heavily in our kindergarten, first, second, and third grade teachers, because by the time they get to James, if they don't have that foundation, they're just not going to make it, and we know that to be true. And it's paying off. So, as I said, I thought that the expectations for our kids were pretty low when I arrived. And our graduation rate was in the low to mid 60s. And it was both disheartening and shocking to me that the response I got from too many people in the community was, meh, That's the best we can do. I refuse to believe that. I just don't believe that only 6 out of 10 of our kids are capable of graduating. I just don't believe that. So we have really focused a lot at the secondary level on three things that we believe are leading to a graduation rate that is improving. So up until last year, we had not been out of the 60s since the state changed its graduation requirement, how they calculate that rate. We got to 70.3 last year, and preliminary results for this year that will be above 73. It's not 95, but it's also not 65. So we know that we're heading in the right direction. And people say, to what do you attribute this? And I'd say it's three things. Number one, we've really transformed our approach to discipline. And if you go online and see the Seattle Times from yesterday, you can read a wildly inaccurate story about that, what that work is really like. They did not portray it in the way that I would have liked them to. But we really have made a commitment to keeping kids in school. When I arrived, the year before I arrived, over 2,100 students had been out of school, suspended, or expelled. And defiance was the number one reason for that. I was a high school teacher. I know how annoying that defiance can be, but guess what? We're the adults. We need to turn those moments into really teachable moments. A kid shouldn't lose the chance at a diploma because they make a bad choice. And that happens way, way too often. So last year, our out-of-school suspension rate was down to 450 from 2,100 just 4 years ago. And we are still committed to putting a student off campus when needed, but we're not going to do it for the wrong reasons anymore. So number one, we're shifting our approach to discipline, so we're keeping kids in school. Number two, going back to my story around hearing directly from kids, more AP classes. This is what they tell me they want. They want more science. They want more AP. They want more labs. They want more hands-on learning. So we have committed to advanced placement courses across all of our campuses, computer science across all of our high school campuses, which kids are loving. And the third prong that I think is leading us to the successes that we're having has to do with the fact that we've made a serious investment in getting kids a window into the world of work. Internships, job shadows, mentoring. So over the last 3 years, we've had over 1,000 students in internships. And it's transforming, really, sort of the way that they see themselves and their future, because now all of a sudden, oh, so I do need to study this if I want to do that. So giving some meaning to what they're doing in school, I think, gives them a window into a future that perhaps they hadn't seen before. And so what's next? We are in the midst of looking at two of our high school campuses and reimagining them for next year. And we want that to be a student-teacher-driven effort. We really want to engage our teachers and our students in what is the learning environment? What does a next-generation high school look like in Highline? And we are committed to making sure that, yes, equity is at the forefront of all that we do, but I would also offer that parity has to be part of the conversation. Because we can be ensuring equity and equitable practices, but the reality is, if you, as we do in Highline, assign students to high school based on where they live, there needs to be parity of what they have access to. I can't go to bed at night if I'm assigning a child to a school that has music and advanced placement and extracurriculars and all of that richness that we want for every child, and I'm assigning another who doesn't get that by virtue of where they live. So it's not just about equity, it's about parity as well. And I think that's part of the conversation that we need to be having too. But at the end of the day, it's not about strategy, it's not about strategic plans, it's not about program, policy, practice, it's about people. And so what we're really trying to do is build relationships between central office and schools, between adults within schools, and between adults and kids within schools. Because at the end of the day, it's the positive adult connection that's going to potentially save one of our high school kids from going down the wrong path. And it's the people in our schools that make that happen. And I am proud to work with the best in Highline.
Really extraordinary work that's happening in Highline. So I would like to just take a quick moment to introduce Dr. Bernard McCune from Oakland Unified over in California. And you heard a little bit about some of the work that they're doing from Secretary King in terms of their work with Change the Equation and matching up mentors with students who are interested in STEM. Change the Equation has been a critical partner in our high school work. Mr. McCune.
So good morning. I want to wow, this is like a classroom. When you say good morning, you get a reply. I want to thank the Department of Education for inviting me here today. I want to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing and Oakland, California. And if you guys don't know a lot about Oakland, it is one of the three major cities in the Bay Area, the other cities being San Francisco and San Jose. And so Oakland is in the middle of those two cities. And Oakland is a place that, even though in San Francisco we have this tremendous city of finance, and then in San Jose, in Silicon Valley, you have this tremendous innovation, Oakland is a city that has everything around it that says it should succeed, yet everyone expects us to fail, except for in basketball. So we'll be back this year. And the reality that we had to look at was, how do we change that? The perception of Oakland in our community, in the Bay Area, and nationally is just that. And the best way to change perception is to actually change the reality. And so what we decided to do is probably three things when you look at education, but our high schools as a whole. Number one was to pursue excellence, as our superintendent said at a meeting we were doing with all our educators. We're going to pursue excellence like it slapped our mother. And so to make sure that we are pursuing excellence for all students. And so the way that we decided to do that with high schools is through linked learning. So for a number of you, linked learning is very similar to career technical education, except linked learning puts in not only career technical education, but it makes sure that the work is aligned and engaging for young people. It includes some things that were mentioned before, like internships. It includes these tremendous pathways for students. So we said that every student in our district by 2020 will be in a linked learning pathway. Now, the reason we did that is that we had data to show that students who were involved in linked learning pathways graduate from high school at a higher level, and then they enter and graduate from college at higher levels. So one of the huge bets we made was on linked learning. Now, this was something for some parents who understand, and just the community as a whole. Some people, when they think of linked learning or career technical education, it's also one of the things that they say, well, that's not for my child. Where our linked learning pathways, when we put a student into a law and public safety pathway, the expectation is that student will be prepared to become an attorney, a judge, and everything in between. So there are multiple on-ramps, on and off-ramps for students. We have done the same thing when we built health pathways. And doing this, we have made sure that there was a connection with our community and our industry, because education is not just the district's problem or something, great outcomes for the district to solve. It is a whole city and community effort. So we have engaged deeply with the city of Oakland, our chambers of commerce, and industries all across the Bay Area. So much to the tune that we created what is called the Oakland Promise. And it is a cradle through college completion strategy that is a partnership between the city of Oakland, the school district, and the East Bay College Fund. We launched that effort in January of this year, the end of January, and we raised about $25 million towards that effort. And a lot of it is in scholarships for kids, but also making sure that we have strategies and tangible incentives for parents and students from birth all the way through college. And so you can find out about the Oakland Promise at a website, oaklandpromise.org. In terms of some of the other strategies, when I said pursue excellence, not just for our students, but for our staffs. So a lot of times what school districts, we invest in students, but we don't invest in the teachers who are with them. So we've expanded professional development for our teachers because we want to be able to support them and hold them accountable. If you don't provide the support, then the accountability is actually a futile effort. One of the other things that we've done is to really increase the rigor, and that is by providing more AP courses, but we've also doubled down on dual enrollment. We have increased the number of students who participate in dual enrollment by 300% since last year. Our goal is that every student in 2020 who graduates from an Oakland Unified School District will have at least a year's worth of college credit through dual enrollment or advanced placement courses. So those have been the huge investments that we've done in our system, as well as when you talk about rigor, we have increased the number of students who are taking computer science courses by 400% since 2 years ago. And then with the goal is that all our students will have a computer science course by next year, and that is actually kindergarten through 12th grade. And so when I talk about this being a project just not for the district, what I would implore all of you to do is to involve partners. Now, I talked about the Oakland Promise and the $25 million to date we have raised for that. But because of this strategy on excellence, we've gotten corporate communities to invest. For instance, the Intel Corporation awarded us $5 million to build pathways in computer science and engineering at two of our high schools. The citizens of Oakland, involve your community because they want to be a part of it. They passed a parcel tax that gives the district $12 million a year for the next 10 years with a focus on college and career readiness. And in that parcel tax, we have stipulated that 90% of those dollars go directly to schools on a per pupil basis so that we can have innovation as we look at college and career readiness. So I am so glad to be here and along with thought partners in this work as we change not only the way that high schools are looked at, but the way education is looked at in the future. Thank you.